Old Baron, The Chronicles of the Red Rage, Episode 1, Ryzen 325. A beep wakes me up. Immediately I know what will be heard after the signal. The synthetic voice of the Old Baron. The beeping always begins when the artificial intelligence of my ship wants to inform me about relevant incidents. Recently, the ship chooses a gentle female voice for the announcements. Presumably, we humans respond better this way. Rising from my narrow bed, the lighting intensity in my quarters is increased much too quickly by Old Baron. A sadist.
Captain von Richthofen, please come to the bridge immediately. The governor of Precy 5 wants to talk to you.
Is that so? As usual, the old hag will not let us land. She thinks a stolen Sternreich destroyer should not be seen near her station. But we have no choice. The old Baron is pretty battered. We are badly in need of repairs, supplies and ammunition. If we had the money, we'd even buy half a swarm of her interception drones. But it will only last for 2 or 3 pieces at best. I'm on my way. Give me a minute. I could talk to the governor from here, but I want her to see me standing proudly on the bridge. I am quite vain in this regard. Rushing through the dimly lit corridors, bypassing a blue-glowing coolant puddle and then a broken plastic strut protruding from the left wall, I finger on the control panel of my comm unit. A slight tingling sensation, and the biomonitoring unit that was implanted in my body by the Sternenreich injects nutrients and circulatory stimulants. It annoys me that old Baron still calls me Captain von Richthofen. I'd prefer Gunther, but there hasn't been enough time to dive into the ship's code deep enough to make those changes. It would not be a problem for Elida, though, but she would make fun of me if I told her. I reach the bridge faster than usual. It is important that we are allowed to land on Precy 5. As I get close to the bulkhead doors, attempting to enter the bridge, the doors slide only a little way apart, forcing me to squeeze through the gap. As I said, repairs. Ryder and Hook turn around and salute me negligently as Old Baron announces that the captain has entered the bridge. The bulkhead closes again behind me with a tormented squeal. I wave them off. The other two have ignored me anyway. Elida has dived into the ship's sensors via a temple socket and is trying to fix what we are able to with our repair bots. Surely she will sense me with one of her two brains, but prefers to devote her attention entirely to her current task. I've seen her control more than 100 drones at a time. I only manage 3 with the jack and get nosebleeds after 5 minutes. The 2 albino clones are more than busy with the operation of the midfield guns. Ryder has also latched in while Hook walks up and down in front of his screens. We only narrowly escaped the Wagner and Captain von Junst, leaving behind quite a few of our tail feathers when we left. But that's the way it is when the Sternenreich wants you. I get why Hook is nervous. Nevertheless, there's no sympathy for me. He knew exactly what he was getting into when he joined my mutiny 8 great cycles ago. Well, actually, I think that he came only for the love of Ryder. But that is not my problem. My problem just flickers in front of me. Governor Teller Ozinski's face manifests on the main screen. Old Baron has made the connection without waiting for the appropriate instruction. The picture is overlaid with distortion, artifacts and flickers, but I can still see that this time she looks especially troubled.
Gunther, I told you you cannot anchor here, right? Get your ugly ship away from us.
She gets straight to the point.
Our interceptors and the stationary guns are pointed in your direction. If you do not...
I know all that, Teller. Don't wet your panties. There are neither Reichsadlers nor Swasties nearby, not to speak of Schreibschips. And do not call the Baron ugly, hear me?
A In my mind's eye, I see a lighter race almost all of our interception drones on a direct kamikaze course into the Wagner. Von Junst wouldn't see it coming. In space geometry and statistical tactics, a lighter is unbeatable. I give her a quick look. In the practical pilot's chair of the old Baron, her elven slender figure somehow seems out of place. I am glad she is with us. Before she joined us, I flew the Baron. If that had still been the case when we met the Wagner, we would have been dead long ago.
I can see for myself that there are no ships of the Sternenreich here. But they will come, and they have agents on the station. If you dock, the word will spread. The Pre-C5 is a private, economically operating company. If the Reich is outlawing us, we are fucked up, Gunther. Piss off, and be glad if my hunters do not shoot up a few of your defense towers to preserve the appearance. This is my best offer.
In none of our previous encounters I've been able to detect anything like fear in Governor Teller Orzinski. Caution and suspicion, yes, but never fear. Different, no. I believe that she will make her threat come true. I nod, and then start to appeal to our barely existing friendship in order to gain some time. Someone comes next to me. It's the physical body of the old Baron, a titan skeleton surrounded by Shaper Gel. Today, he has modeled himself to match his gentle female voice and pushes me with the much too firm breasts as he steps beside me and holds a tablet in my face. Teller Orzinski sent an encrypted message while we talked. Pretty paranoid.
I think I understand, Madam Governor. We are leaving.
Speaking in the general direction of the screen, interrupting the transmission.
New causal leader.
She does not open her eyes nor her mouth as she answers me. Her voice comes simultaneously from the speakers in the walls, from my comm unit, and from the mouth of the old Baron Android next to me. She can be a little special sometimes.
Where to?
Reading the encrypted message again.
Ryzen 325, third moon. There is a small daughter colony of the Pre-C5 there. Set up the route to stop at 7648-347-4967.
There, we meet a supply boat of Orzinski. They will take our orders and then meet us again after we have done the job. That's all she can do for us.
Ryder and Hook almost simultaneously ask what kind of job I am talking about.
Always looks funny to me when their almost identical faces move in sync.
Oh well. Only if you know them, of course. Otherwise, it looks pretty scary.
They are from one of the first breeding lines. At that time, the Reich was happy if their barely aging toys worked at all. Such things as mental impact on human borns were not valued very much back then. It took quite a while before I could persuade them not to walk around in the partner look they were used to. Ryder now wears dark Ulara 6-style street clothes and a dark red armor vest, while Hook has thrown on the uniform jacket of a Reichskommander, a spoil of war which he is quite proud of. I am trying to answer them and push Baron away from me at the same time. Somewhat unsuccessfully.
Depends on what we find. Search and rescue, I think. Or perhaps containment.
Ryder and Hook do not say anything anymore. They fall silent as Elida's voice asks about the onboard system.
The Red Rage.
Her voice sounds absolutely neutral.
Maybe. We'll see.
Didn't we decide to avoid those jobs in the future?
Yes, we did. But we had more options when we made this decision. See the upside. At least Ryzen 325 doesn't belong to the Sternenreich.
Yes, because there's absolutely nothing of interest on this Atmo moon.
Not quite true, Elida. They're digging up some pretty fancy ore stone there, but nobody should know that. That's why the governor wants us to go, and we have empty cargo holds. If the Red Rage broke out there, then...
Nobody would stop us from filling them, she ends my sentence, and Ryder and Hook grin at each other.
Exactly, Elida. In this case, it would only be Ektos down there. Ethically, no problem, I'd say. And if it's not the Rage, then we'll probably just have to convince the local commander to start paying his dues to Teller Ozinski again. In both cases, we would be able to bring the old Baron back on track. Let's go. The old Baron is not a small ship. On the contrary, she is an aging titan. A scarred veteran of countless wars and battles, a loyal Reichsritter. And now she is mine and all I have. If you want to walk and see all her corridors completely, you need half a day for sure. I could have used a wheeler, one of our small electric vehicles. But I feel like walking. I want to take a closer look at our landing gear. In fact, I'm not so optimistic about the new job as I wanted the others to believe right now. First of all, the conveying station on Ryzen 325's third moon was not really small. Teller Ozinski had sent very detailed maps. The suborbital defense facilities were not bad. Orbital ones were not mentioned, but who could tell if there were any defense satellites or a drone swarm hidden somewhere close to watch over the station? If the old Baron had been in good shape, I would not be very worried. But this way, right now, our trusted ship is more holes than armor. Some of them dangerously close to the RR-63 reactor room. It was pure luck. The railguns of the Wagner did not take us to the afterlife. The old Baron also has two of these guns as main weapons and a Heckler Mactron laser on top. But if you decide to use it, you lose all your maneuverability for at least 5 minutes because it consumes nearly all the energy of the ship at once. The destructive power is enormous, though. But of course, the job is not that easy. They never are. Some things can't be lasered away. Apart from the miserable state of the old Baron, there is a second catch to the matter. Teller Ozinski had a condition. Her son Brandon lives on the conveying station. We should bring him back home if he had problems down there. That in turn means that at least one of us has to go down there personally. And if it really was the Red Rage that caused the communication being cut off, this will not be a walk in the park. Like everywhere else, the smell of fire and shared cables hangs in the corridor that now leads me to the deck. That and a touch of old glory. Some of the wall panels are twisted and deformed. Their steel has shielded thousands from space over the last Deka cycles. Overcome, I check with the old Baron that there are no leaks near me. I do not have my helmet with me because it was originally my plan to hang around on Station Pre-C5 and enjoy myself a day or two. The Baron assures me that I am not in danger. I am pleased to see that the bulkhead to the deck opens completely and without any problems as I approach. Here we store and maintain our combat suits and our portable weapons. Those chunky armors, people look like giant ants, but thanks to the high-performance servos, you can move surprisingly well in such a thing. The concept of an enterdeck is quite old. An enter-capsule basically looks like a gigantic projectile. It holds up to 8 men in heavy armor. The great fun with them is this. While the close and midfield guns of the ship to be boarded try to weave an impenetrable carpet of projectiles between themselves and their attacker, one shoots the enter-capsule straight into this carpet. Hundreds of them. More, if possible. Of course, never all of them will be occupied. Most of them get destroyed, and it is simply hoped that those loaded with human infantry will reach their destination, penetrate the enemy ship's hull, and stop somewhere inside. There, the poor pigs that had been shot towards their ugly fate could then disembark, cause a maximum of chaos inside the enemy ship, and ideally take control. I myself have had the dubious pleasure of being shot through space in such an intercapsule 3 times. It was not fun. Since I am captain of the old Baron, we gladly have never had to use a single intercapsule. We still have hundreds of them. However, the Wagner has deformed the launch tubes with her rocket swarms more than slightly. Currently, to 99% unusable. I inspect our combat suits. They are pretty bruised, but I do not find any indication that the armor is weakened. Only hooks, 3 out of 5 grenade mounts are empty. I go to the corresponding locker, take out the explosive projectiles, and attach them to Hook's armor. Then a thought pops up. If Hook is sloppy with his grenades, is he safe with the rest of his ammo? I find out I am right and fill up all the armor and tunnel ammunition magazines on Hook's battlesuit. His Vollrüstung. Sloppy clone bitch. Next, I'll inspect the huge hangar deck. Frighteningly empty. There are exactly 17 autonomous interceptors controllable by Elida's 2 brains. The old Baron is not called old for nothing. The technology of the ship is no longer state of the art. At the time of its construction, this was different. Back then, this ship had belonged to the absolute elite. That is the only reason why it is still a serious opponent today. Apart from the main laser, the old Baron has no energy weapons. The ship relies almost completely on plastic projectiles that are accelerated by propellant charges, as well as on unguided rocket swarms, which convince mainly by quantity, and just a few guided missiles. No energy torpedoes and only very primitive shields. The quarters and storage decks that provide room for legions of clones and everything needed to keep this army functional are empty, and the heavy metal of those decks and compartments shields us from much of the threats in space. The age of the Baron also is why each of the interception drones has 2 7-barreled Gatling cannons and not the more modern blasters. We urgently need to upgrade. But we need some change for that. Until then, our bullets will simply fly straight. In addition to our interception drones, there are a few other interesting vehicles on the hangar deck. 2 Reichs-Shuttles for civilian transfers, barely used. A last dropship that is designed for air-to-ground combat and can easily handle the heat of entering an atmosphere. It looks much more damaged than the suits. I check its ammunition magazines and the general condition. Of course, the magazines are full because old Baron himself is maintaining the dropship with the help of the service robots. Oh, Vollrüstungen, he mustn't touch. Infantryman superstition. If we cannot communicate with Ryzen 325's third moon conveyor station, we'll probably get there with just that chunky box that somehow looks like a fat, gun-staring bumblebee. Such an L-ending is only slightly more pleasant than being shut in an intercapsule. I hang around near the dropship for another 2 hours and lose myself in thoughts. Then the old Baron informs me that it is soon time for the meeting with Ozinski's supply ship. A humming sound behind me makes me realize that he in his wisdom has sent a wheeler who will take me back to the bridge much faster than I would manage on foot. For the second time in this day phase, I enter the bridge and again the 2 clones salute me. Stop that, you deviant sodomites. The Sternenreich's protocol is not valid here. They laugh. We have a good relationship. The physical Baron now looks the way his inventors originally had intended. A dignified male appearance with Zwirbelbart. However, he did not change his voice, which irritates me when he tells me that he is ready to connect with the captain of the supply ship. On the screen, I first look at the barge and then at the captain. He is a relatively young man with dark hair, a serious face, and the same slightly golden complexion of Tello Ozinski. The formalities are discussed quickly. I have pre-written the list of everything urgently needed on board the old Baron and transmitted to him with a movement of my finger. He opens the file, reads through it, and nods slowly.
That seems reasonable and appropriate,
he says.
We are expecting you at these coordinates again in 2-day phases. If you are not around then, we will circle for another 3. Do not call us over long distance. The Sternenreich could track something. We must not be associated with you.
Then, before I can reply, he finishes the conversation without saying anything. Ryder grins maliciously at me. He knows that I do not like rudeness. Elida asks if she should steer to Ryzen 325 as discussed before. I say yes, and she gives full thrust. I love the sensation, the feel of force when the powerful thrusters ignite. Now I tell them that our mission at the conveying station still has a string attached. The extraction of Brenton Ozinski. Ryder does not care, and Hook is always excited about action. Elida comments on my behavior by driving a cleansing robot against my shin. However, she does not do it too hard. She knows that we have no choice anyway. I take some time to reach our destination. I go to the viewing deck. There are people who cannot stand the beauty of the universe, the infinity, the millions of colors, the deep blackness, and the combination of all of that. Psychic weakened persons are infected first. Back in the early days of space travel, when the RR63 element had just been discovered, the mental hospitals on Ulterra had been overcrowded with crazed cosmonauts. But not only the universe itself had an impact on the psyche of the first spaceman. The RR63 was a curse and a blessing at the same time. The sheer amount of energy that could be extracted from the element was the blessing. RR63 made the conquest of space possible in the first place. The curse was the Red Rage. RR63, which was first discovered on Mars, has some hidden layer, if you like. A kind of mental radiation that was not known then. If you are exposed to it too long, you develop violent delusions. If they last long enough, the infected person completely succumbs to them, and then a process called ecto-manifestation initiates. Impressions from one's own worst nightmares become real, and first turn themselves against their creator, and then against all life that they can find. In the early days of the Reichsdehner used this effect to depopulate entire planets by launching guided ships with RR63 reactors on the surface and into the cities. For a long time, the knowledge of the RR63 vaccine was one of the galaxy's best-kept secrets, and only the Sternenreich was in its possession. A colony that did not have this vaccine and was exposed to R63 usually fell into a seemingly self-inflicted, insane bloodbath. Only a few hundred great cycles later, rebels have developed and widely distributed a gene therapy that immunizes against R63 radiation. Their portraits hang on a wall in my quarter. Francisco Lake, Largo Palmieri, and Bruce Empson. By that time, however, the Sternenreich had brought as much as 3/4 of the known universe under its control. And today, despite possible vaccinations and the gene therapy that is now being administered to each and every infant in a civilized area immediately after birth, or even while still in the womb, it is incomprehensible that outbreaks of red rage are recurrent. There are studies, detailed reports from countless affected colonies. I have them collected and evaluated by the Baron. Our own experiences with this phenomenon are also included in the evaluation of these reports. The results are very worrying. Varying in a way that I am almost inclined to spend the rest of my days on the old Baron. We have everything we need here. The ship is completely self-sufficient. A ship as it was built in the old days, despite the steering interface Elida built in when she joined us, filtering and reprocessing systems for water and respiratory air, synth units and green decks for cultivating food the organic way, and almost everything else. And on top of that, it is said that the old lady can even sail on solar winds if necessary. She just stupidly also has a 63 reactor, like any other long-range spacecraft. The thought of it always leaves a slight pressure in the back of my mind that just won't go away. We are all vaccinated and gene-treated, but still. In the early days, the Red Rage has raced through space like the Luftpest over all Terra. Then it was dammed up, appeared only occasionally, and finally vanished completely. And now, more and more new outbreaks have been reported for a few great cycles, despite gene therapy and smuggled Sternenreich's vaccines. If one then considers that these outbreaks take place exclusively in colonies, stations or planets which were not incorporated into the Sternenreich and often are even engaged in open war with it, then one must inevitably come to the conclusion that the Red Rage again is used as a weapon. Somehow, the Reich must have managed to manipulate both the gene therapy and its own vaccine so that it no longer works within these areas. The vaccine should be the smallest problem. It originally comes from the Reich. Separatists and rebels steal it and send it to the free zones. The intelligence service of the Reich should be able to manipulate some of those batches quite easily. But the gene therapy, they would need agents in the medical care services of the target areas, but and a lot of patience. Well, the Sternenreich has patience. Patience and a long memory. Furthermore, all reports of outbreaks of Red Rage that have been registered over the last 50 great cycles have this in common. Never at any time has anyone in the newly affected colonies been able to make an emergency call. I can only explain this in such a way that the infection, if one wants to call this process so, takes place creepingly. Only then, as soon as approximately 100% of the affected area is infected, it breaks out, and then there is no one left to call for help. Survivors hardly ever found. And then there are the manifestations. Ectoplasmosis has been a well-known phenomenon since the days of old Terra. It was not possible to explain it then, and it is not now, but I know that the predecessors of the Reich have done research in this area as well. The fear-born nightmare creatures have been surviving their creators since a few Deka cycles, staying behind to walk the bloody cemetery R63 has caused. That too is new. In the older outbreaks, the few available records reported that the manifestations usually ended their existence with that of their creator. The Red Rage evolves. The overall picture worries me, but I know that I will not find a solution here and now. I decide to ponder for a few more minutes and enjoy the beauty of space surrounding me. At least, that is unaffected by all this. Then I head back to the bridge. This time, the two clones do not salute. Rather, they release themselves from an intimate embrace and look ambushed in a way that I have to grin. Back to your seats, you Bleichlinger. Do a target practice on a few meteors or something, Ryder mumbles. I can see from Elida's tender smile that, as opposed to me, she must have understood his comment. So she does not get too cocky, I ask her how the repairs are going. In 2 hours, at least all damaged circuits and cables will be mended. Energy and water in coolant lines. The large cracks in the outer hull cannot be sealed without additional raw material. All smaller ones were filled by the bots with liquid steel. Not ideal in terms of protection, but space is holding on only 3 decks of Old Baron now. I am pleased, and then ask when we'll find ourselves within the call range of the conveyor station. It will take some time, she says. After all, we do not want to communicate via Weitfeld. Teller Ozinski values this crashy's right. Ryder and Hook have actually started a contest now. The winner is the one who can powder the most aimlessly space-drifting rocks within the next hour. I instruct them to do that in simulation mode. The two obey. May the best clone win. I run some simulations myself. They are based on the maps of the conveying station provided by Teller Ozinski. Contracting my earlier concerns, they have nothing with the long reach down there, meaning that the Old Baron can soar in the orbit above the scene. That comforts me. The availability of large caliber air support always calms me down when I have to act on the ground. Then, there's the question of how we would get to the planet. There are several possible scenarios, and in the simulations none went down without losses. The problem is Ozinski's son Brandon. We do not know exactly where he is. That is why we cannot use the heavy weapons of the Old Baron. The conveyor station has 4 orbital defense towers. If we were in a war, we would have blown them away with the railguns of our ship from a safe distance and then would have landed full of Seelenruhe. But what if our target subject was in one of the towers? That possibility is cancelled. A direct approach with the dropship alone would lead to our certain death, the simulation tells me. 2 variants are reasonably promising. We could distract the orbital guns with our drones and try to reach the surface of the planet with the dropship. That would certainly cost us a few more of our interceptors, no matter how brilliantly Elida would control them. Or we could penetrate the atmosphere of the planet some 100 kilometers away from sight and then approach the station on the ground. This variant is cheaper, but much more time-consuming. I do not like it. It is still hard for me to decide, and I postpone it for an hour or two. Maybe all of this won't be necessary, I hope. Maybe someone will talk to us. I notice that Elida is getting up. She opens her eyes. They move slowly back and forth. From experience I know, it now takes about 20 seconds to completely disconnect from the Old Baron and the systems by finally gently pulling the plug out of the socket in her left temple. She straightens and stretches herself as it is accomplished.
I've been fixing you for hours now, as best as I could, dear Baron. Would it not be appropriate if you would bring me a coffee and some snacks?
The persona of the ship nods dignifiedly and walks up to a synth unit which is embedded in the wall cladding of the bridge near the entrance bulkhead. He comes back with a tray. On the way to Elida, he also puts a cup of coffee in my hand. I could get mad and ask why I do not get any snacks.
but I know that then he will mumble about insulin and fitness. Not that he could really overrule me. I am the captain. But for this kind of manipulation, I am sometimes grateful to my ship. Somehow maternal. I am glad that mine is dead. Otherwise, she would now be tortured in some Sternenreich's prison. They want me, probably more than ever, since we have beaten up the Wagner so gloriously. I drink coffee with the lighter, and we talk through a few maintenance protocols. I wonder where in her petite body she hides her second brain. She comes from Ialera. Everyone there is small like her. The skin tone is slightly bluish. The physique is so fragile that it looks like an intended counterpoint when she is placed next to the muscular bodies of Ryder and Hook. However, anyone who considers her to be harmless or weak is wrong. A few great cycles ago, the Sternenreich created them as pilots, hackers, and assassins. Some of their ancestors have fled and have founded a new civilization far from the well-known space routes. Today, their descendants are in high demand for all of their originally inbred talents. Only that they can now trade them in the open market. Honestly, I have no idea why exactly she hired on my ship. Everywhere, really everywhere, she could have gotten a lot more pay and would not be on the wanted list of the Sternenreich. I am a lucky guy, and I know it. When our cups are empty, our conversation is over. Neither she nor I would burden our professional relationship with private chatter. Yes, we would, okay. But not in a situation like this. So we wait until old Baron finally announces. Sometime later, he does. A station on the third moon of Horizon 325 is in call range. I walk to the command desk and call the conveyor station on all channels.
This is Gunther von Richthofen, captain of the Old Baron. I call Moon Station. We ask for a landing permit for an unarmed shuttle with...
I hesitate for a minute and wonder if I really want to take all of them with me.
With two visitors on board.
Nothing happens. I repeat. Again, no answer. Can you imagine? One more time, for good measure. Nothing. That does not look good. What do you think? Ryder and Hook shrug. They had been bred for infantry missions. Ryder, however, looks at me with surprise 10 seconds later.
They do not answer, but their guns are all aimed at us,
he says.
Ah, but we are too far away to be hit, right?
Yes, naturally. That's not what I am about. Either the defense of this station is on auto, or someone controls it, but doesn't want to talk to us. I'd like to send scout drones. But unfortunately, they would burn up when entering the atmosphere.
I think for a second. Then I say,
huh. We could put two or three into an intercapsule and shoot them down if we find an undamaged launch tube anywhere. People would not survive that. The drones may. This way we could get a better impression than from up here. Otherwise, the scanners show nothing unusual.
Elida says no.
Tube 334 or 226. All of the others are currently blocked.
I go and use the robotic arms installed in the wall to move the drones aboard the intercapsule in tube 334. Three of the kind we use every now and then to explore asteroid fields if we suspect a hidden threat there. Then I have an idea and steer an additional ground robot into the intercapsule. I do not even know if the other drones are airworthy down there at all. I also do not feel like asking Elida. Presumably, they will be able to fly. She almost never makes mistakes and would have told us if otherwise. As I head back to the bridge, I feel that Elida is already operating the control thrusters and aligning the Old Baron.
The intercapsule is launched just as I stand at my control desk again. We observe the straight-ahead trajectory, then how the big projectile begins to glow as it enters the atmosphere, and how the defense towers of the moon station open fire. But the intercapsule is too fast and survives the hail of bullets. Shortly before hitting the ground, the brake wings expand. Nevertheless, it digs deep into the soil. As I said, human infantry would not have survived this, despite the G-force compensator. Excited, we observe the hole left by the intercapsule. 3 minutes later, after a cloud of combustion gases is spewed out of the hole that had to come from the blasted capsule opening, one of our spy drones reports its possession. Just one. The others probably did not survive the impact. It is one of the three airworthy devices. We watch on the tactic screen as it ascends and heads for the point of interest. A LiDAR switches the cameras and sensors of our little spy on the main screen. Then she lets its electronic eyes glide down the gigantic main building and the outbuildings connected to it by numerous gangways and bridges. Through the windows, the drone cannot look inside. The system's sun is far too bright down there. The windows are mirrored. For a while, Alida makes various calibration attempts with the drone's optics, but it just doesn't work. Then, as we turn our attention away from the huge main building, we see it. Alida, there seems to be a quarry in the back, and to the right is a large entrance to a mine. Bring the drone closer, please. Alida confirms the command with a concentrated nod. She is not reconnected to the systems by cable, but operates the drone from her own control panel. I can see that two of the big conveyor belts are still running, but without payload. And when I say big, I mean that they are about the size of the old Baron. So far, everything is normal. However, what is not normal is that the vehicles used to get the ore to further processing do not move. The cockpits stand open. The bodies of the drivers are scattered on the plain. Nobody has gotten away from his vehicle too far. They are old, chunky trucks, not remotely controllable. The kind you buy when you have to shop cheaply on the black market because you do not want to attract the attention of the authorities. And between the corpses, the gigantic conveyor belts, and the vehicles are ectoplasts. They are many. The Red Rage rules down there. We are on the hangar deck. Alida has refined the simulations that I have just run. The variant with the interception drones as a diversion is the most promising, and we decide to proceed according to the simulation results. Even if that means that we will completely be without interceptors if the defenses of the conveyor station should destroy all of them. Ryder and Hook keep whining until I allow them to reach the planet with our last two Thors and not together with me in the dropship. The Thors are vaguely humanoid Titan colossi, weapon-staring combat robots operational in space as well as on planets. Alida will stay on the old Baron and coordinate everything from above. Ryder, Hook and I wear our stolen Sternenreich's armor. The two clones are just entering the lifts in the Thor's legs as I take seat in the cockpit of the dropship. The display of my helmet shows me an almost unmanageable mess of status messages. I execute the regular system check of the dropship while Hook enthusiastically expresses his pleasure that finally something happens. I ignore him, let him talk. The engines of my ship run perfectly, and a LiDAR opens a launch tunnel for me. I steer the ship out of the old Baron and go to a waiting position. Out here, I'm startled by how worn the old Baron looks from the outside. It is one big patchwork of ugly welds and hurriedly riveted metal plates. The shiny liquid steel or repair bots applied gives the ship an appearance reminiscent of the ore alteration. Many of the containers that were the external payload of the old Baron are blasted or simply are missing. 3 of the 12 defensive guns operated by Ryder and Took are also destroyed. The complete hull and most of the control thrusters are deformed by heat. A miracle that they still are functional. My ship reminds me of a dying dinosaur, an almost to death harpooned whale from ancient times, and the hated signs of the Sternenreich are all over the heavily armored hull and add to the ugliness. One day, I will have renounced these symbols once and for all, I swear to myself, for the thousandth time. A lidar launches the interceptors now. 17 slender, fast and deadly spacecrafts shoot out of the hangar deck in a wide, triangular formation to then form a fractal-looking, constantly oscillating pattern. This algorithm was developed by Alida herself. Statistically, the hunting drones are the hardest to target in this way. Every now and then, one breaks out of the pattern, behaves atypically, only to again plunge 10 seconds later into the elegant flow of tireless movement that Alida has created. Lastly, the gigantic fighting machines controlled by Ryder and Took leave the old Baron. They are chunky, ugly things that seem to consist only of armor and guns. With their help, we will be able to safely clean up the ectos that are outside the station. Alida is instructed to immediately withdraw the hunters as soon as we land successfully. Actually, I did not want to expose the Thors to the fire of the stationary defense facilities. But if it hits the dropship, it will be bad enough if I burn up with it. No reason to take the clone couple with me. Originally, the old Baron had more than 4 dozen dropships. However, I stole her at the end of a Sternenreichs Kreuzzug, a so-called holy war, which claimed many casualties. But okay, should we be able to complete our mission successfully, we would manage to bring the vessel back on track. Ryder and Took are now hovering next to me on port and starboard, and ahead of us, the swarm of interceptors is in position. The old Baron lies below, seemingly motionless. "Can we start?" asks Alida. I say yes. The interceptor drones surround us, take us into their protective center. Then we accelerate in perfect synchronization. That always is something uplifting, I think. All the wheels mesh perfectly, and we immerse ourselves into the atmosphere of the third moon of Risen 325. For a minute we are blind and the sensors are going crazy as the frictional heat makes the shells of our spacecrafts glow. When it is over, and the control systems have switched to suborbital maneuvering, we already see the muzzle flashes of the defenses below us. Alida takes over our control units, and we can do nothing but hope and trust her two brains. It takes 5 seconds for the first glowing tungsten projectiles to hiss past my dropship. The onboard computer reports that I have been locked by 3 guided missiles, and the automatic system is starting to fire glare bodies. As we discussed, Alida uses only light and precise weapons. No collateral damage desired. She only targets the oversized capacitor arrays of the defenses, as there are no human losses to be expected. Next to me, one of our interceptors is hit by a rocket. The debris patter against the armor of my dropship. I can see out of the corner of my eye how Ryder's Thor is racing down in a swiftly spiraling motion, seemingly missed by hair's breadth from several bursts of fire. Ryder screams with joy. Clones are not afraid. Alida seems to have taken over the guns of Hook's Thor too, because that precise,
almost ecstatic salvos that his Titan Colossus sends upon the steadily swirling missiles everywhere simply cannot have been fired by him. Explosions tear up the air all around us. I see three more of our unmanned interceptors first turn themselves into beautiful fireballs and then fall down, blasted into pieces. Accelerated by my engine, I rush past them, leaving them behind me, overtaking the Thors, and then, seemingly at the last moment, a LIDAR fires the brake thrusters. It is mathematically perfect. For my peace of mind, my Zelenowe, I nevertheless wish she would have let me land a little more gentle. But I make it, and relieved I see the two Thors reach the bottom. Hooks is missing a weapon arm, the missile silo is gone, and torn cables and wires dangle down the huge titanium torso and spray sparks. We've whirled up a gigantic cloud of dust and have to wait for it to clear. On the radio, a LIDAR announces that we have lost 9 of our 17 drones, and that she will now withdraw what is left to the old Baron. I thank her and leave the pilot's seat. On the way out, I grab a G70RD from a wall mount, a weapon that I could hardly lift with my pure muscle power. Now the servos of my full rüstung are doing the hard work. I ask Ryder and Hook which of them wants to give me a ride, and Ryder is a tiny bit faster. The dropship's exit hatch opens after I have given the appropriate verbal command, and I set foot on the third moon of Ryzen 325 for the first time. The visor of my helmet protects my eyes from the blazing sun and makes everything look unreal in an indefinable way. To calibrate the gravity compensation of my armor, I make a jump. It carries me a lot further than I expected, and I bounce against the Titan-armored leg of Ryder's Thor. The battlesuit, however, gets enough data from this. My next moves are not that clumsy, and with my Magnet Harpooner, I am docking with Ryder's right weapon arm, which houses a three-barreled machine cannon.
How many Ectos has our reconnaissance drone marked yet?
I ask Elida. 122 outside. There's still no data from the buildings. I thank her and ask her to show the Ectos on the tactical display. For the Thors, the Ecto beasts usually are no threat. It is more like busy work to wipe them off the surface of the moon rather than a fight. It will not be that easy inside. The big weapons of the combat robots tear apart the unnatural demonic figures and punch deep holes in the surface of the planet in the process. I tell Ryder and Hook to be careful and not to shoot in the direction of the conveyor station. For safety's sake, sometimes they forget things like that. They enjoy carnage way too much. They feel happier like a clone baby in its tank during combat. Why they joined me? They are broken. The two have discovered themselves. For the Sternenreich, they are useless. To date, I have not seen any Sternenreich's clones expressing doubt or deny an order. Those two do that. Fortunately, I have not given them reason to do so very often. But if there is something on their minds, they do not hold back. Our longest dispute lasted 3 days. I could only win with the help of old Baron Intelligence. It is pretty grueling to argue with two men who look like Ryder and Hook and behave almost identically. Stomping and kicking up dust, the Thors start to trample forward. With every step, I swing against the metal. Of course, the combat walkers move in sync, only that this time not a LIDAR, but the genetic code of their pilots is responsible. We landed farther from the station than originally planned, but we are still alive. I do not blame a LIDAR. 20 minutes later, Ryder and Hook have blasted 122 Ectos to the afterlife and destroyed 34 autonomous ground patrollers. Out here, the big guns are ripping apart the Ectos just like that. Everything evaporates.
inside with our handguns, even if they are oversized for the human body, that will be different. Every ecto has a central pacemaker, some kind of heart. It is called Zentralknoten, central knot. Only if you hit that, you can really kill them. The only problem is that it is always in another place. You will never find two absolutely identical ectodemons because they are the result of the individual fears and nightmares of the RR63 infected. Some look like humans, others are more animalistic, and sometimes bizarre hybrids, anatomical impossibilities with claws and teeth, not able to live or even move if they were real creatures. With his last burst of fire, Hook somehow hits the small spy drone we had sent ahead. Alida scolds him over the radio. I ask her where we find the best access to the building complex, and another spot appears on my tactical display. When we arrive, I loosen my magnetharpoon and float down. Ryder and Hook, also clad in armor, come half a minute later out of the respective right legs of their battle colossi. They also opted for the heavy G70RD. For another minute, we just stand there like two-legged ants, while Elida takes control of the two Thors and returns them to my dropship. They will guard it while we explore the conveyor station. A while later, she leads us in front of a big gate. That gate by which the vehicles bring in the ore to the processing plants. Hook shoots a transmitter neuron into the gate control, which allows Elida to hack the door for us. It takes less than 2 seconds, and several hundred tons of metal slide up just enough to allow us to force ourselves through the gap. Then Elida closes the gate again. Right after we have left it behind us, the sensors in my armor tell me that one could breathe the air in here. Ryder must also have scanned our environment because he asks if we can open the visors. I deny. We have air for, I look at the indicator in my left arm, 3 hours and 24 minutes in our tanks. I do not want to breathe this death smell into my body. Hook lets us know that only the emergency lighting is active, and he is right. Nevertheless, I can see that the vehicle hall in which we are located has gigantic proportions. Unused or repaired harvesting vehicles sleep in perfect lines. Some with gripping arms, and some like the classic trucks from the old days, only much larger. There are no ectos in sight. But corpses are. Most of them wear technician outfits, and here and now, from up close, I see more than clearly how cruelly the infected people have died. Ryder and Hook lock up next to me with their G70s as I kneel down next to the first corpse and scan it. The biodiagnostic program of my suit indicates that a young woman did not bleed to death. The spine was severed. I would never have seen that with the naked eye. She just has too many other injuries. I loosen my gaze from the awful pile of human flesh at my feet and spark a lighter.
Where's the living area of the facility?
She does not say anything, but another dot appears on my display. I ask her if everything is going according to plan on the old Baron. She confirms and tells me that she is checking on some of the returned interceptors. I tell her that she'd better direct the main guns and our guided missiles at the conveyor station so that we can vaporize this hell as soon as we have confirmed that Tello Ozinski's son is among the dead or we have left with him. She answers that she has already done so and that one of her brains is busy with loading our 2 shuttles with harvesting bots to bring as much of the Hearmind ore aboard the old Baron while we complete our job. For a second, I wonder what it is like to have 2 brains. She seems to know what I am thinking and tells me to see that we move forward and take good care of each other. I am not asking her how big our statistical chance of success is. I again call up the encrypted message from Governor Ozinski to remind me of the details. Her son works in warehouse logistics and has a modest room in living area 1023. This time, I do not ask Elida to do my work, but instead enter the two places as target points on the tactical map. Then I turn to the others and see that Hook is not there anymore. In a fraction of a second, I correct this impression. Hook is still there. He just doesn't stand next to me anymore. Something has seized him. He hangs about 15 meters above the ground and struggles, and I can see he has deployed the nanoblades of his combat suit. His rifle is lying on the ground. The something that attacks him grows out of the ceiling. Not that it broke it, no. It has materialized between the floors. Damn shit, I think. If the central nut of this demon, this gigantic tentacle reinforced ecto, is on the next floor or even outside the building, this will not be easy. Ryder now also has noticed what is going on and fires at the approximately 5x5 meters large amorphous core of the nightmarish creature, hoping that one of the projectiles will be effective. Another ectoplasmatic tentacle is racing toward me and I throw myself aside. Then I target the one that holds Ryder in a crushing death grip. I hope that his battle suit can withstand the pressure that has to weigh on it for a while at least. Then I open the fire on the tentacle. I have to try to dissect it so Ryder can break free. Once he's out of the danger zone, we can use explosive ammunition or grenades. Would make everything easier. Both clones scream now. Hook, with irrational fury as he again and again punches the tentacles with the blades, and Ryder, worried about his husband. My helmet's acoustic system goes into damping as the violent noise of our shots crosses the threshold. The strikes wander over the tentacle, tearing psi flesh off, leaving holes through which I can see. The tentacle still does not want to tear. Another tentacle beats after me and again I manage to dodge. I have to interrupt my burst of fire though. Ryder, on the other hand, sees what I intend to do and completes my work. The tentacle finally rips off and the screaming of the nightmare creature echoes right in our heads. The scream is at least as angry as Hook's. He hits hard on the ground, but I know his battle suit keeps him from breaking his bones. He stays motionless for 2 seconds. 2 seconds in which I shoot again at the ecto-demon and in which Ryder charges a micro-missile into the launcher mounted under the barrel of his weapon. When he fires it right into the center of the ecto, the severed tentacle has already dematerialized and Hook gets up from the ground. Suction cups have left traces in the metal of his Vollrüstung. Acid. I wonder whose nightmares this creature was probably born of, while I admire the beautiful geometry of the explosion that the micro-rocket causes as it strikes. Manifested tissue flies around our heads, dissolves in flight, and 3 seconds later the danger has gone. Hook storms at Ryder, and in the combat suits their embrace looks awkward, almost grotesque. A LIDAR answers via radio. I have never seen such a big ecto.
Me neither.
I agree. She says something confirming and praises me for my presence of mind, which I find inappropriate. Then I see something. A kind of red mist lays in the air for a second, fluoresces and glows, then forms a line. No, many lines. They start from the points where the ectodemon's flesh fell back to the ground and from there to the ceiling. Then my eyes blur and the lines have disappeared. Right now I want to ask Elida if she could see these lines too through the camera of my helmet, but then her voice sounds again. I do not like to tell you, but there are Sternenreich ships approaching. 3. According to the call signs, it is the Österreich, the Blitz, and what we have left of the Wagner. Von Junst has found us. Her voice sounds very calm. I am not so good at self-control as I am commanding her to get out of orbit. We are on our own for the time being. To be continued. For more information, please visit bloodwords.com. Old Baron, The Chronicles of the Red Rage, Episode 2, Octagon. Steam, fog, smoke and a ghostly light. A red haze smelling of explosives surrounds us while Rider Hook and I penetrate further into the vehicle hall. It comes from the barrels of our weapons. It comes from the explosions of the grenades. It consists of particles of dissolving ecto-demons. The rows of gigantic lorries that are used on this moon to transport the mind ores appear as if they stand especially for us on a trellis. In reality, however, there are ectos in and among them. I can feel and sometimes see them hiding there. In front of us, behind us, all around us. So far, none had been bigger than the tentacle monster that had broken through the ceiling. I still can't get the suction cup marks on Hook's follower stone out of my head. Lucky Ryder was so quick-witted. They are both walking in front of me. Ryder secures to the left, Hook to the right. I too should be attentive, more attentive than I actually am, because I find myself waiting for Lyda's voice to ring in my ears. I want to hear her tell me she's escaped the three Sternenreich ships. But as much as I am hoping for it, it's not happening. At our current speed, it will take us another 30 minutes to cross the gigantic vehicle hangar, illuminated by weak emergency lighting. I wonder where all the smaller service vehicles that move the teams of mechanics who must have been responsible for the maintenance of the large trucks had gone. Because, as impressive, even titanic as the vehicle hall and the vehicles inside it may seem, all this is antiquated technology. Scrap, either stolen, captured or purchased on the black market. To build and operate a plant of this size without the Sternenreich getting wind of it is only possible in this way. Maybe there is a handful of expensive repair bots somewhere in the conveyor station, but most of the work has to be done with human labor. These people are there too, somehow. Their bodies are all around us, some with dislocated limbs, some with torn, some with their own guts in their mouths. The dead faces are frozen masks of horror. A woman we get past seems to have torn her own eyes out. Couldn't take the horror anymore, I guess. Ryder and Hook have gone silent. Don't make their jokes anymore. Something is squawking to our left. We're all ripping our guns around and firing. The helmet loudspeakers are going into damping. The ectodemon is a small humanoid being with a compact body and far too long arms of the strength of main power lines that he drags behind him on the ground. We are lucky, and already one of our first salvos hits the Zentralknoten. The demon takes a few more stumbling steps towards us and falls to his knees. His arms make semicircular movements, back and forth again, while his psycho flesh begins to dissolve, becomes part of the haze that surrounds us. We go on. At a distance of about 30 meters, I see three human-sized cocoons dangling from the front of one of the ore transporters high above. Hook notices them too. He loads a new grenade into the underbarrel launcher of his oversized weapon. Half load, I hear Ryder's voice over the loudspeakers of my helmet. Spider, he mumbles. A kind of metallic sound, a scratching as from many chitin armored legs. Eight of them, I imagine. A spider must be big. About 20 times the size of a human being. That's how I see it in my head. This manifestation of human primeval fear is not necessarily rare. Those infected by the RR63 virus create their fears, and many are afraid of arachnoids. Slowly we approach the cocoons, and when we have almost passed them, it begins. What is now coming down on us is not a giant spider, but arachnoid are the beasts. And there are thousands of them. They come from all over, from among the transporters, falling off the ceiling, in front of us, behind us, and right and left. In the first seconds, we will certainly tear up 100 or more of the fist-sized, eight-legged bodies. Not nearly enough. From their countless mouths, reinforced with jaws, wafer-thin threads shoot at us from all directions and stick to the armor plates of our Fullerstone. I see several of the threads hit Hook's head and stick to his visor. He has problems wiping an armored hand over it and getting a clear view again. The battle suits are not designed for such fine tasks. More and more spiders crawl out of the haze and the shadows. We go back to back, forming a loose, oscillating circle, rather a triangle, firing in all directions while we continue to move to the other end of the vehicle hall. We don't really have to aim, there are that many. While I am firing shot after shot, my eyes scurry over the little beasts and over the indications of the proximity sensors of my armor. They are too small to be detected. I turn here and there, trying to see everything that's going on around me. The spiders begin to encircle us and move strangely synchronously. A hint that they are to be regarded as one single ectodemon. There are so many. So infinitely many. In which of those disgusting reddish bodies is the Zentralknoten? We can keep shooting and hope for a lucky shot, but we do not have nearly enough ammo to catch them all. Even before the spiders appeared, half had already been used up. Hook fires the underbarrel grenade into a ball of spider bodies at some distance. Our Fullerstungen shield us from the heat of the explosion. Maybe bought us some time. More and more of the sticky net threads connect us to the swarm in a deadly way. Still, the strong servos of my armor prevent that my mobility gets limited, but there is no end in sight to the spider tide. Sooner or later, their strength will no longer suffice if we don't think of something soon. From the circle of the spiders, which has formed around us in about 10 steps distance, a spearhead of about 100 manifested animals is released. Their movements seem bizarre, wrong and disgusting as they move at amazing speed on Ryder. He doesn't notice them until Hook calls his name in concern. Care resonates. Immediately, Ryder lifts his mighty armored leg and begins to crush the spiders to ectoplasmatic pulp. While I curse myself for not having taken a flamethrower and continue to shoot at the little beasts in my field of vision, I feel something landing on my helmet. It must have come from above. Maybe it jumped or maybe it dropped down on me with a silky thread. It's just a little spider. One doesn't matter, I think, and keep shooting. My shots shred ecto meat and then hole as ricochets through the vehicle hall. My hail of bullets has broken the circle on my side, and for a short moment I have time to turn my head again to see how the two albino clones do. The spider sortie troop which set off on Ryder was processed by him into a reddish fluorescent mass. Only a few surviving animals flee him. We join the swarm collective. A retreat. The thought echoes in my head. The military organized character of the word tickles something deep inside my brain, and scraps of memory from my time in the Sternenreich infantry patter down on me. The battle for the Bockwitz gas station on Midgard 34. Back then, we were the spiders. We had drawn a siege ring around the enemy's fortifications, just as the spiders have now drawn a ring around us. From the cover of one of our destroyed Bärenwut tanks, I launch laser-guided missiles at low-flying rebel fighters while their troops manage to break through the blockades in three places. The rockets hitting. The explosion in the sky draws the attention of another fighter. The pilot saw the jet of exhaust gas from my missile. His onboard guns shred an octagon of our clone soldiers, but the pilot never stops firing. I remember my fear, the almost complete paralysis that had taken possession of me at that moment. Closer and closer, in a straight, precise line, the bullet impacts came and touched the dusty ground seemingly tenderly. On the radio I heard von Jun's orders, saw nothing but race dust.
Draw back now, can't you hear me? Draw back now, Mu-Ulrich, and get your troops out!
I knew that von Junst was in the landing cruiser Siegfried, hovering behind a chain of hills outside the combat zone. The Spider King is safe. Yes, if the one who dreamed of this deadly spider swarm also had military experience, then my two friends' armor and mine are covered over and over with web substance. Now I notice that the reactions of my Vollrüstung are not as fast and precise as before. I can't take any more time.
Keep them busy. I think I know where the Zentrale Knoten of this Ecto is.
In the back, outside the combat zone. They were always there. The generals, the leaders, the cowardly pigs. I sprint towards the wall of spider bodies piling up around us. They are not moving away. On the contrary, as if pulled together by an uncanny magnetism, they foresee the place where I will try to break the circle they have drawn us in. They tower up there. Hundreds of white threads shoot at me with a frightening certainty, and in their totality, they have a power that shakes me. I mustn't fall, I keep thinking. I mustn't fall at any cost. I am ordering my armor to lift the gravity adjustment. The servos and the joints now work again without any damping. I am pushing myself off the ground with all my strength. The momentum carries my armored body, which certainly weighs at least 200 kilograms, high into the air. Some of the spider threads break, others withstand the force of my movement, and the spiders are also torn into the air. In flight I turn, see Ryder and Hook still surrounded and shooting. None of them are looking at me. They are too busy staying alive. From up here, the spiders look like a single bubbling mass. Behind them, I can see the gate area from where we will leave the hangar into the actual conveying station. There are a handful of other ectodemons. They don't seem to notice us. It's not them I'm looking for. They are no problem. I am looking for something smaller. Something small, separate from its kind. The Spider King, the General. The coward who does not take part in the battle, but who observes and coordinates the struggles and sufferings of his subordinates. A single small red fluorescent dot, somewhere in elevated position. My jump reaches its zenith as I scan the roofs and the huge loading throes of the transport vehicles with my gaze. Too little time up here, too little time to see everything. I had hoped that my jump would carry me to the ceiling of the hangar, that I could cling to a brace there and overlook the situation from above. That's not how it went. I start to sink again and find nothing.
Or is it? Yes, there. Four vehicles behind Ryder and Hook. And the approximately 8-meter high wheelhouse of an ore transporter on the right side. The optics of my helmet zoom in. There it sits. When I fall, I aim for the spider. A single shot. The projectile bursts, the little cowardly beast. I keep falling, putting myself in a position where the dampers of my armor can absorb the fall in the best possible way. Ryder and Hook are looking in my direction. I stare at the never-ending flood of small spider creatures that now draws the circle around the two closer because they stopped firing their weapons for half a second. In a minute, I think. Soon, the thousands and thousands of spider demons will dissolve into red gas. But nothing like that happens. Regardless of losses, the ecto-spiders begin to attack Ryder and Hook. Their chewing tools snap open and shut in a ghostly, thousandfold rhythm. That noise is horrifying. When I hit ground, the two albino clones are covered over and over by the little beasts. I stand up and sprint as fast as my armor allows. I throw my G70RD on my back. When I turn my wrists, 50-centimeter-long blades shoot out of my forearm armor. Best Sternenreich steel with nano-coating. The spiders are now much too close to the two clones for me to shoot at. What they are doing looks ridiculous, but it's the right thing to do. They stand in front of each other, almost overgrown with spider demons, and, it looks like, beat each other with the mad speed that results from their highly cultivated reflexes and their interaction with the systems of their Vollrüstungen. Of course, they do not want to kill each other. No, with one blow, Ryder sweeps three spiders from Hook's shoulder, which, cut into pieces, already dissolve while falling. In a quick movement, which makes glaring sparks fly between the blades of Hook's gauntlets and Ryder's armor, the clone returns his husband's favor and frees him from about a dozen demons in one fell swoop. I still have the shrill, metallic sound in my ears when I reach them and also start to help. I try to free Hook's body from the little ecto-demons with fast, precise blows. I sever manifested web substance and stocky, eight-legged bodies equally. For about 5 seconds we go on, shouting old Sternenreich battle cries, beating, stabbing and stepping on the approaching vicious beasts, which continue to stream in with the tidal power of an eternal sea. It could have continued like this for a long time, when the fastly learned routine with which we got rid of our attackers changed. Hook stands still for a second and stares at me. He showed something I cannot understand because I'm roaring and cursing like an Aeschat Grail's knight. Thereupon, I see it from the corner of my eye. Ryder whirls around to me, also stares in my direction, and then, as if on a secret command, the two jump at me. Our heavy Vollrüstungen crash into each other. Of course, I cannot withstand a coordinated direct attack by two clones of the Sternenreich. They throw me to the ground. Then Ryder's over me, yelling something. He's swinging way backwards. Did spider bites poison him? Did they break through his armor and infect him with something? I see his bladed arm bouncing up, then it races down on my head.